¿Qué vimos, Jocelyn? Las estaciones. ¿Qué cuántas eran? ¿Cuántas eran? ¿Cuántas? ¿Tres o cuatro?
Cuatro
estaciones.
You get all that? No? How about in a song?
Cuando el reloj marca las 11, 11 esqueletos corren de 11, 12 esqueletos descansan por la noche.
Okay. ¿Qué estábamos aprendiendo en esa canción?
Still no? Too bad. You just failed second grade math. At least you got a taste of what millions of kids experience in school. Author and UCLA professor Patricia Gondara.
We put them into school and we say, we're going to start in a new language that you have no labels for any of these things that you already know. I mean, the most critical, important learning that occurs in a person's life is discounted.
And these hurdles have larger economic implications. We're potentially talking billions of dollars, as language minority students make up more and more of the school population of the South and the nation.
Those kids, given the way we're dealing with the situation now, are enormously high risk for not making it in this society. That is going to convert into lower average level of education for the people in those areas. The economic consequences are going to be enormous unless we figure it out.
Baylor University economist Von Pham agrees.
In the labor market, there's the discouraged worker that leaves the labor force because they can't find work. I think the phenomenon is similar here. These immigrants who are trying to learn a new language on top of subject matter, it could get very hard. At some point, they don't see the point and they're going to drop out.
Language minority students have some of the highest dropout rates in the nation. And there's another more subtle connection, something that gets lost when these kids don't learn the dominant language, something Pham lived when his family came over from Vietnam.
We serve the role of being bilingual, being the bridge from that generation to the mainstream. You could actually help that previous generation to be a little bit more functional in society.
Like starting a business or getting a job. That was true in Pham's youth in Florida, and it's true today in Georgia, where fourth grader Gabriela Washington is learning Spanish and learning in Spanish at Unidos Dual Language Charter School. She's already thinking about the benefits of being bilingual.
It will help me because I know that some jobs are looking, better paying jobs are looking for people dual languaged.
Speaking of fitting into economies, let's head back to the hypothetical hot seat to warm up for another counterintuitive point. Margarita Pincos, former director of the U.S. Office of English Language Acquisition.
Let's say that you are IBM and you're going to send one of your programmers to work in France and they don't speak French, but they need to know the labor laws of France. What language would you teach them that? In English. If you really want not to be sued, you want them to learn that in English.
But people reverse that logic when it comes to kids in school. Maybe because there's a counterintuitive idea there, one we covered earlier in the series. If you teach language minorities their math, science, and other core subjects in their native language, they do better in school, including learning English. But parents, educators, voters, and policy leaders don't necessarily know that. Jason Mizell, who's actually all those things, does know it. He sees it with his students at World Language Academy, a charter school in North Georgia.
They're going to be able to speak English fluently, read it, write it, and at truly high academic level, but the same thing in Spanish. So it's not like you're sort of stripping away their language, but you're actually building on top of what they already have and helping them to keep growing.
And he says that win-win should be the goal of schools teaching language minorities.
Because otherwise you have these kids who graduate who are neither here nor there. They end up dropping out of school. Let's be honest. If you're not successful in school, you drop out and you look for something else. And a lot of times that something else is not what we want as a society.
The big question really is, despite the politics, will the steady increase in a part of our population that's consistently undereducated push leaders to try different approaches? Put a different way, what are people in the South going to do?
For
WBHM in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Dan Carson.